This is Yum Pak. He is our special guest for this episode. I went to the event night held by Sammy Jr. Sydney in early September to attend the Champion Talk. Yum was one of the guest speakers.
Well, my name is Yum, guys. I am the World Cup Paces Champion of 2023.
Yes, he is the 2023 World Cup Taster Champion, crowned in Athens, Greece. Within 4 years' experience in specialty coffee, his growth is incredible.
Yeah, look, it's a dream of mine. Oh, just before we get into story time, guys, I just want to say, huge fan of you two. Ever since I started out in coffee, it was always a dream to be able to do something with you. Thank you for your time. Thank you for saying yes to this. Thank you for giving back to the community. Just want to say a huge thank you from the bottom of my heart. So
we are curious on his career path as well as his childhood background. But first, let him introduce us what actually the Cup Taster competition is.
Cup Tasters is a game where there are 8 triangulations on the table. A triangulation is where there are 3 cups of coffee, 2 are the same and 1 is different. The aim of the game is to find the different cup and put it to the front. That is your selection. Now, in the game of Cup Tasters, there's 8 of those that you have to do.
Well, Cup Tasters competition seems a low-key game. One competitor with a 1-cupping spoon, everyone could give a try. While someone might deny that, it is eventually the hardest game throughout all the coffee competitions. Then, what is the truth? Please listen to Yum about his story with cup tasting.
Okay, so here we are. We're at Sydney's most popular underground cafe. It's called Diggy Doo's Cafe, where all the coffee lovers and the industry workers, the gathering place. So today we are very honored to have 2023 World Cup Taster Champion Yum, so to be our guest speaker. So welcome, Yum.
Thanks for having me, okay? Hello, everyone. Ni hao ma, wo jiao bai ying yin. That's about the only amount of Mandarin I speak.
When you start with coffee, do you still remember your first impression?
Ooh, I think a long time ago, my first impression was like, why does mom always drink this stuff? My first experience of working with it came in like New Zealand about 5.5 years ago. But my cousin had this small hole-in-the-wall coffee shop. And I was there like as a part-timer every few days. She taught me what she knew at the time, which was, have you ever played with those manual coffee grinders? It's like, tack, 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 tack. And then you gotta like whack it. And then you have a tamper and then boop. It was like a $200 grinder. I think the tamper was like plastic. It was a 2-group machine. It would take like 2 minutes to steam milk. I thought I was a barista. So I studied psychology in uni and I was really lost in terms of like what I wanted to do. And I think I went 2.5 years through and I was like, what am I doing with my life? So my friend at the time just moved to Sydney, Australia. And he's like, hey, you should come over. I was like, all right. Packed up all my stuff. I had about $2,000 in saving and I moved to Sydney.
We probably forgot to mention your background because you have Korean background.
Oh, yes. So I was born in Japan, Urban, and then my parents were Korean, 한국人. But then I grew up in New Zealand, 신西兰.
You don't have any experience living in Korea.
I was there for like my early like preschool, I think.
How's your Koreans like?
Oh, 한국 말할 수 있어.
Oh,
yes, yes, okay. Yeah. Ike, are you testing me right now? My mom speaks fluent Japanese and Korean. I can understand bits of Japanese, but I can't actually like. If you meet in Japan tomorrow, I would struggle. I'd probably understand a little bit of what they're saying, but they would have no understanding of what I'm saying.
So you moved to New Zealand when you're quite young.
Around 4, 4 years old. Went to New Zealand. Grew up in Christchurch, New Zealand, so the one that gets hit by all the earthquakes. Mm-hmm. And then I think when I was like 7 or 8, I went to China for 2.5 years to study. But actually, mom went in there to start a business with a friend, but I think it didn't go too well. I don't know what happened. All I heard was like they took her money and left.
Do you know which city you went to?
Beijing. But man, it was a different world. Like, I think the whole culture shocked me. I think I went through one of the street markets at the time. They had like starfish skewers, scorpion skewers, tarantulas, and all that stuff as well. But I was like, wow, it's like walking through, you know, like a Ghibli movie. You know, like Spirited Away, like there's all these markets and everything. So that was super interesting. But yeah, it was like different. I was in another universe.
Yeah, I think back to the coffee story. So your first time that you had a coffee is in New Zealand in your cousin's shop and yes. Play with a very old grinder and a 2-minute steam milk. What brand was it, the machine?
Okay, the brand was, shout out to Three Llamas. I'm pretty sure they're still going. Like, yeah, no, Three Llamas. Is the name, and I think we had one of their blends that was like the gourmet blend or something. At the time, I thought it was pretty good. I'd have to go back and try it again and kind of give it a little bit of QCing. But look, I think it was great coffee at the time.
Hey, but you don't have the concept at the time that I'm using specialty or commercial blends, right?
I know that coffee's coffee. I didn't even know it was grown from a cherry.
The taste wise, can you remember some or no?
Just really chocolatey, nutty. It wasn't like horrid. Like, I've tried some phenolic, moldy, dark roasted, super bad stuff. And I would think back to that time. Like, you know when you're doing your Q graders and you gotta like taste all that stuff anyway? And then you look back and like, have I ever tried something this horrible before? And you're like, no. I don't think I've... Even instant coffee, I don't think I've ever...
Are you the black coffee drinkers only?
No. I love milk coffees, actually.
How's the milk quality in New Zealand like?
Better. Yeah, New Zealand, I think it might be the biggest export...
Dairy products.
Yeah, dairy products. Mm-hmm. New Zealand milk. Oh my god, I should totally do WBC with like New Zealand milk.
Apparently you had a coffee tasting experience in New Zealand, and then when your friend asked you, hey, we should go Sydney, and you came here with a $2,000 savings, and what was the plan?
I would not say I had any experience in coffee, but I would be like, oh yeah, I'm a barista. I'm a very good barista.
Because you did some practice in your cousin's
shop. Yeah, at least I thought it was enough. And then when I got to Sydney... Yeah, look, I actually came here to pursue the path of like digital content creation, like videos and photos. But I wasn't quite confident enough, nor did I feel like I have enough skills to charge people. So when you don't charge people for your services, you don't make any money. And if you don't make any money, you can't pay any rent. I was at my friend's place in their living room, sleeping on like 2 layers of yoga mats. That was my bed. I look back on it now, like, great memories, right? I wouldn't do it again, ever. But I had 2 yoga mats. I had a sleeping bag that was like my blanket. Mm. And I stayed there for about 2.5 months, 3 months-ish. Mm. And I think when it was like near the end of that period, I was like, Jesus, I have maybe like $300 left. I'm going to have to find a job. And my friend's like, why don't you just start charging people for your videography? I'm like, dude, I suck. Like, I need money now. I can't like look for clients. But yeah, I needed to find a job. And I took a train into the city. And I ordered a coffee from a place called the Gillian Chocolate Cafe. There's this one in Circular Quay and one in George Street as well. So I think like when I got off the train, I was walking out the station. I was like, whoa, this place looks really cool. It looks really fancy. Oh, Gillian, I know these seahorse chocolates. It must be delicious. So I go in, I order a mocha. Like, after the first sip, I was like, yes, this is where I want to work. And I put my CV in. There was a rumor going around at the time saying, if you're a barista in Sydney, you can get $25 an hour. And that's when I was like, I'm going to be a barista. Wait, I am a barista. I'm going to get that $25 an hour, baby. So
that's really hard by the time, seriously. But do you remember which year was it?
2019. It was like 4 years ago. It was like a day after my birthday, I think. Now you're probably looking at like 30, 32, different time of age. Yeah. So
when did you get response that you hired? Or
I think the day after.
Who interviewed you?
The boss actually interviewed me on the day. But I remember I only got that interview because the boss was there. But also the manager that took my CV in, she was also Korean Nuna. Da jie, jie jie.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, this Korean kid speaks pretty decent English. He's native from New Zealand, so I'm sure he'll be a great asset to the team. Plus, look, he says he's a barista. He can make coffee and everything. So the owner was like, oh my God, yes. We have this New Zealand boy that wants to work for us, not a working holiday. Like, don't have to worry about, you know, me leaving or anything. So I got the job, but G didn't know that I had been accepted yet. She threw my CV away after I handed it in.
And then I was, I think I was the supervisor.
Oh, you were a supervisor.
So part of my job is to also oversee the staff and then to report if they perform well or not. So they also like, so give me some sort of training to see what kind of stuff that we want for the shop, what kind of criteria and everything. So by the time I saw him walk into the shop, like back in the day, his hair was yellow, bright yellow. So obviously Gensha. Like, And then when I received his CV, like I saw like where he worked before and then where he coming from and then like how many years have he worked with coffee, and then I saw the way he steamed the coffee, and then I'm just like, yep, nope. So I took the CV straight away, put it in the bin, and then I guess the manager think otherwise. In a way, like, I think she want to give a new chance to the new people. So she took it back and then, like, give it to the boss. And then, without me knowing.
So that's what happened.
Yeah, without me knowing, honestly. And then suddenly, I saw this guy again walk into the shop. And then suddenly get an interview with the boss. And I'm just like, what happened? And then suddenly, all I know is just like, he got accepted. And he's like, how? Why?
Was the skill really suck?
Like
really he doesn't even know how to make coffee. Like I don't know how confident that he is that he can come to our shop and say like, I'm a barista in New Zealand. I'm gonna be the one who have to train him and have to work with him, and then I'll be like, oh no, not that one.
You know how you guys turned into a couple?
Well, okay, so we started working together, and we wouldn't say we were enemies. We were like frenemies. We were like, work together. I would talk a lot and I'd not get much work done.
Yes. And it's a busy shop, you know. It's like a 10 kilo kind of coffee. Like, and every time we are in the same shift, for some reason, we are in the same shift all the time. I have to work with myself because he'd be like talking with the customer without doing the job. So I'd be like busy doing everything and then he'd be like talking. So he wasn't the most favorite staff ever for me. But one day, and then like the fact that the head barista was so nice to him, that make me question a lot, like why everyone in that shop, every staff like him, only me doesn't like him. One day when we working late of night together, I heard that he got a chance to learn straight away from the head barista, to learn how to do coffee straight away from the head barista. I just say straight away to him, you are the most fortunate people in this shop, because like you get to learn from the head barista straight away. You get so many chances, yet you didn't seize the opportunity.
Because he said like, young, as long as you come here, like on your days off or if you have free time, I will teach you personally how to be a barista at this shop. Anyway, the head barista, he was the head trainer for all Gillians around the world at that time.
Wow.
And it was a franchise. So he had a very good job and he knew what he was doing. And Gene was really frustrated at the fact that he doesn't train. Like, do you want to tell her about training people?
Yeah, like, because the head barista was quite famous as well, because he trained so many people as well. Like, some people, when he finished training, they just gonna go to another shop. So that's also why he said, like, he don't want to train anymore, because, like, people just gonna leave. Yeah, but sad. Then, like, he break this one rule just to train him. He doesn't even train me. I have to beg him. I have to work so hard for him to train me. And then suddenly this guy got this amazing opportunity to be trained by him straight away. And then he just like wasting the opportunity. So I was just like quite frustrated. So yeah, I was just saying like, bro, you gotta fix yourself. Seize the opportunity. This is like a golden opportunity. Make the most out of it. Like, don't waste it. If you want to become a good barista, do it.
What's the turning point that make you change your mind?
So after that, the next day, That's when I start seeing him coming to the shop earlier and actually do training. When we're working in the same shift, he will literally work. I'll be like, oh, this guy changed a lot. Starting from then, you know, like when we work in that shop, we will finish late. Sometimes we don't have time to eat. So me and Yang and then this one friend called Rit, we're gonna go out to some Korean restaurant to just have a late night snack. And then from then on, we start to talk. Also, I start to get to know him. What is his background? From then, I start to understand why he behaved the way he is. But sometimes, like, the more I get to know him, the more I can see, like, he has the most genuine heart out of people that I know. Well, now, not so much, but, like, back in the day. Back in the day, you are the most genuine heart person. And then, like, I can see, like, he's not lazy, actually. You know, you just, like, he just doesn't know what to do. I guess I start to fall for him when I see him change to become a better person.
So you fall in love with him first?
No, I'm not.
Yes, absolutely.
No. I'll just say, like, I'm interested.
Okay.
Interested, you know?
Sure.
And then, like, the more we work together, for some reason, we always work at the late night shift. When we finish, we eat together, and then I just, like, take a walk, and then just talk more about life and everything. And I remember one day we were walking in the bridge, Sydney Bridge, the one from Darling Harbour to Pimon. We were sitting in that bridge, and then suddenly he was asking me, like, hey, what would you do if, what kind of activity you would do with your boyfriend if you had a boyfriend?
I think the conversation was like, what would you like to do with your girlfriend? And I was like, I don't know. What do you want to do with your boyfriend? And it was just like, really, it was really cheesy. But I think both of us were like, yeah, trying to like see.
Kind of. Because like for me, I always have this question in my mind, right? Why is this guy always, you know, like, it's not common, you know, it's like 12 a.m. in the morning, you know, like, and then you had a shift at 6 a.m. Like, it's not normal for someone who spared their time that much, you know.
Yeah.
I'm just like, what is this guy's purpose? What does he want from me? Obviously, I don't have visa. Obviously, yeah, I'm not the manager or anything. What does he want from me? So I was kind of like questioning a lot. I was trying to find out, you know. So in my mind, like, I could never believe that there's a chance that he's gonna like me. So I just like didn't pay any attention at all, and then so I just answered the question like, yeah, one day if I have a boyfriend, I would just love like live a simple life with him, just like, you know, cooking together after we finish work. And then for some reason, his answer is the same.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's the moment where I'd be like, oh. So he wants the same thing. He is that type of person as well.
But I think your life changes a lot since he got the championship, right? And then I think change a lot means it breaks your usual pace. And then is it life you want, or?
I think we're on the journey to get there together.
I think we're kind of borderline that time. We say like we want like have a nice night and cooking together, but we never actually do.
We did. No, you don't remember. I was like a week after we got together. I was like, I remember on the walk with her. I was like, oh yeah, I'd love to cook some Japanese curry and like just chill out at home. And we did that like the first or second week together. You don't even remember this.
Yeah, but just one time.
No, like five times.
Wow.
A lot. Yeah, life is busy, lah.
Okay, good job. Okay. You remember.
Yeah, but I think everything's getting into a better direction. Mm. I think someone turns up in your life for some reason. At least right now, you can be together and achieve the final goal. Just treasure each other, right? It's supposed to be, it sounds like ending, but no, okay?
It's just the beginning.
How you end up with the cupping, that's from like a barista at a chocolate shop even. Maybe the next step to forward, you might find a job in the specialty coffee shops.
That was the very next step. I started at a very small, I think they did around like 5 kilos a day, maybe like 3-5 kilos. Family run business, super friendly. Like they always made me lunch. I was late 80% of the time. They were so nice to me. I was like 2.5 hours late for the job interview and they still gave me the job. So yeah, I started at that place. Well, I started at the chocolate cafe. Then I wanted to learn about specialty coffee and I was like researching some local shops.
Yeah, so from the chocolate shop to get interested in specialty coffee, what's happening?
I found James Hoffman. I think like coffee was just starting to be picked up on YouTube.
Right.
And I was just Googling, like Reddit search. And there's so many forums, actually, when you like look back into it. Before YouTube, I think everyone was just chatting in forums. James Hoffman was a huge influence. And I was like, I love specialty coffee and I want to learn more about it. So, yeah, I applied to a local specialty coffee cafe. Mm-hmm. Yeah. The name was called Woodpeckers.
But that's the journey that you start to get into specialty coffee. That's seriously.
Whoa. Seriously? It was my first step. So I learned that there's pour overs, there's single origin coffees, and then there's cold brew.
They had a pour over by the time already. Yeah. Wow.
I couldn't make it because I didn't know how to. But I would always ask the guy who's making it, like, what are you doing? Like, it takes so long. Do people even order this stuff? Like, what? I had no idea. So from there, I think I spent about 3 months. Mm-hmm. It was quite a short job because I just wanted to keep going. I thought I'd learned what I could at that place, and like, it sounds bad because 3 months at a workplace and then you're already out to the next one. It's like, even I would not hire me if I had the chance to hire myself. But I told the owners, like, hey, this is the direction I want to go to. I would love to keep learning more, and I really thank you for your time, and if I can ever work for you guys again, I'd love to. But I think just right now I'd really love to do my best to just try accelerate as much growth as I can.
Did you make up your mind at the time, I'm going to stay in coffee?
Yes. At that chocolate cafe, when that barista, when the head barista, name's Jojo, but when Jojo made me the coffee, I was like watching him making it. Like, he's moving all like crazy cool, crazy fast, and it looks so cool. And I had no skill. And so I made up my mind, like, I want to be the best barista. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know how that sounds like, but I just want to be the best barista I can be. So that was the goal that I had, and I just made sure that I could do whatever it takes to get to that point.
So 3 months stayed in the local cafe, find your direction and say bye bye to the owner, or feel sorry to him for sure. And then the next step is the
city shop called Regiment.
Ah,
yes,
I know the owner.
You do know the owner.
Zach, right?
Zach, God, he's a legend.
Very busy shop at the time. There was Five Senses or Veneziano?
Yeah. I went there as soon as they changed to Veneziano. I think they were with Five Senses for a year or two, and then they just switched over. And then that's when I got in, and it was really busy for like the first. I got smashed.
It's like 20 kilos a day.
Minimum at that time. I was getting verbally smashed, physically smashed, emotionally smashed. It was, yeah. But I grew a lot from that experience.
How long stayed there?
I stayed there for 1 year.
Oh, wow, 1 year. Good on you, man.
Thank you. I think I had the work cut out easy for me, to be honest. Like, when I joined, it was super busy, right? So I had to just sink or swim, learn as I go. And then I think 3 to 4 months later, COVID happened. So then it was pretty quiet for the next, like, 3 to 4 months. Yeah. But then as people started coming back, it just started getting busier again. Yeah. Didn't quite get to where it used to be. But yeah, I learned the most at that place.
Did you start cupping in that shop?
So I went to that job because I wanted to learn more about specialty coffee. Mm-hmm. And I thought by going to a super busy shop, I would learn all about the intricacies of tasting and different pouring methods and different origins. I thought I'd learn everything at the busy shops. But turns out, busy shops are high volume. It's what do you call it? Like, what's the word? Conveyor belt. Yeah. One person does the shot, one person does the milk, one person does pouring, gives it away. Like, it's a very systematic. I learned the hard way. So I really wanted this job and I got in and I'm like, yes, I'm going to learn. Oh God, I'm just a oh, that machine. I think I was crying after some shifts, like, oh my God, what am I going to do with my life?
Yeah, everyone does. If you work in those tough cafes, you just treated yourself as a machine. But you have to be appreciated about that period because your skill put in today is still quite solid.
It's foundational.
Yeah, so since the COVID hit, so most of cafes were at least half closing down. Maybe especially for the city, it's quite cruel because very few cafes can really survive. So what did you do during that time?
Regiment was actually one of the cafes that stayed open throughout the entire
lucky
time.
Lucky you.
Yeah, so I still had a job, fortunately. Mm-hmm. I think Gillian had a few months where they were closed for a bit. Mm-hmm. Jean was actually working there for the last, like, very long time. But, so at least one of us had a job and we could still, like, get by. And then at the end of the year, I said thank you to Zach for the time and opportunity that he's given me. And I just wanted to have a press refresh button. I just wanted to kind of see what the broader specialty coffee industry had. And I just wanted to have a different job because I felt like being a year at this place, sure, money's great, it's busy. It's a respected cafe, but I still wanted to keep learning. I wasn't exactly sure who to learn from or how to learn, but I just felt like I wanted to have a change of place. So the next place I went to is a place called The Goods Line. The Goods Line is not operating, unfortunately, anymore, but rest in peace. The owners, Jack Hanna and Andrew Hunt, Jack is the co-owner of The Grounds, or ex-founder of The Grounds, and Andrew was the head of green bean head of coffee at The Grounds. So they were very good friends, and they wanted to open their separate venue outside of The Grounds. So they scouted me as a head barista, and for me, at that time, I still didn't know too much about coffee. I could dial in somewhat. I wouldn't be able to describe to you all the nuances and exactly what you're going to taste, but I knew what was good, at least from my palate, and that's what I'd be serving on a daily basis. Straight up, that's where I used to be. Yeah, what happened there? I spent another year there. This was, one year regiment, 1 year at The Goods Line.
So 4 years in industries.
Yes.
This year you got a champion. And 2 years to doctor in not getting to cupping yet. And then so initially it was 2 years left over.
Yeah.
And that was the year that you practiced to be a champion.
Pretty much. At The Goods Line, I tried to make the most of every opportunity. And Andrew, being the head of coffee and head of green bean at The Grounds, he had a lot of knowledge. And he's a very open person. He loves to share. So I'd ask him, like, hey, Andrew, after we finish, work on Monday, Wednesday, or wherever, can you show me what you used to do? Like, can you teach me how to grade coffee? I'd love to learn about what this Q grader thing is. And so he spent, like, many, many weeks just, like, sitting down with me, cupping coffees, talking about why they taste like this, explaining to me different origins. That was, like, the first exposure I had. And then the next one would come from Benji. From the queue. So Benji is the green bean importer or Indonesian green bean importer, but also he has his own roastery cafe over near the city. I think his cupping was the very first one I ever went to. And learning about Indonesian coffees from him was really huge because Indonesia has tons of different regions and every region has a different flavor profile. And that's when it really sunk into me. Like, I couldn't really tell the difference between an Ethiopian and a Kenya at the time, but all these different processed coffees from Indonesia plus different regions and him explaining to me why they tasted different, things started to click. During my time at The Goods Line, my friend of mine, you might know Harrison.
I shouldn't know him when I met him.
Gotcha. He's like, young, I know this guy in the middle of the city in the newspaper kiosk. He loves coffee and he does cuppings outside the street. I was like, what? Why would you want to take me there, dude? And he's like, just trust me. Like, this guy used to be ex-roaster for Proud Mary's. I was like, what? What's that? Proud Mary's Coffee, one of the OGs, I think, like, maybe the most influential coffee roaster in the Melbourne coffee scene, or maybe even the world. They changed the whole game. But Paul used to be the head roaster for
Proud. He's the head roaster?
Yeah.
I thought he's just a roaster.
No. And I think everyone, like, I don't want to, bow down to him and be like, oh yeah, Paul, you're, because he hates that shit, right? He's like, don't do that, it makes me feel weird. But yeah, but he, like, respect where respect is due. And the fact that he kind of started when Prouds was like starting to roast their own, and he kind of grew it with the owner at the time. Just hearing those stories was like pretty influential. And actually, I listened to my friend, and we went to one of Paul's cuppings. I think it was either Tuesday or a Wednesday night, and it was literally newspaper kiosk, and he had like, it didn't even have a table. It's like a meter and a half long and about 25 centimeters wide. And he'd have like 10 cupping bowls, and he'd be like, I just roasted this. This is a Sidra. This is a Geisha. This is a blah, 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 blah. And he'd be like giving us this coffee lessons every week. And so he went to that for like ages.
Damn, I missed that part.
Oh,
like,
man.
I've heard that it's a kiosk in there, but I was like, oh, it's just a kiosk. What's so special about that?
It was the kiosk. It was such a legendary place.
Wow. But, yeah. So is that the turning point, the obsessed with the coffee?
Yeah.
I mean, cupping?
Yeah. I think that point I was like, wow, like coffees can taste so different. It was very, yeah, it's a very humble place. Yeah. And I think unless you know someone that knows someone, you wouldn't know, or unless you want to give it a try. So for us, because I always thought, oh, super high-end machine, super expensive coffees, it has to look like the most expensive thing to be the best thing. I was wrong. I was completely wrong. And I think I idolized the wrong things. And then when I met Paul, it was like all from the heart. Like, he had knowledge more than like most people that I've ever met in my life in terms of like coffee. But he does not, doesn't flex, he doesn't show off. It's just, if you want to talk coffee, he'll sit there with you and talk coffee for like as long as you want. But it's just, he does it straight from the heart. And I think that's why everyone comes to this cafe now, or this space, because it's run by someone that actually cares. And he's not just about coffee, but the people that come to. So, incredible human being. I love Paul. So after the goods line, or near the end, a job opportunity came up for Honor Coffee in Sydney. I heard a lot about that place because, well, they got all the champions, right? Sasha Sestich, Hugh Kelly, Matt Lewin, Victor Wu, Devin Long, Charlie Chu. They had everyone, all the big names, right? And for me, knowing, like, I found out about coffee competitions like quite like early, like when I was still at Woodpeckers, but I had no idea how to compete. Like, who do I need to talk to? Like, what do I need to do? What do I need to prepare for? I have no idea. But when I heard about Honor Coffee, I was like, that's the place that I need to go if I want to compete. Why? Because, well, they got champions, and if they have champions, they must be doing something right. So I applied for Honor Coffee, got the job, started learning from there. Like, and I think the way that they approach coffee is something that kind of I would love to talk about a bit, because it was completely different to any other cafe that I've ever worked at. Like, a lot of places, it's volume. Like, still good quality, high quality, no cutting corners, but it's always about volume, about efficiency, about just like quick service. Whereas Honor was like, coffee is number one. You tell stories through coffee, you connect people through coffee. Like, every coffee has a story, every story has a different flavor, and you need to be able to, you need to learn to share that experience with everyone else. Yeah. And that was a very different concept to me at the time. So yeah, I learned a whole lot. And during that time, okay, so this is when I wanted to learn about cup tasters. I was dialing in coffee in one morning, and everyone that I gave that coffee to was like tasting it, giving feedback. Acidity is like this, it's quite like citric, malic, it's like medium balance, grind setting a little bit. I was like, what the hell? What do you mean malic, like citric? What is that? You know? Like, sweetness, balance, like what? I just taste, yeah. Like, what are you guys talking about? Mandarin? Yeah, sure. You guys must be making stuff up, because I don't know what you guys are talking about, but I want to know. And so in the beginning, I was like, I'm going to be the next World Barista Champion. And then, well, that's what I thought in my head. But then I was like, you know what? This latte art, cup tasters, brewers, man, I'm not interested in barista brewers. I want to know how to taste. Because if I know how to taste, then all the other ones are going to come easier to me, right? It starts, it's like, if you want to tell someone about, hey, EK, I really want you to try this coffee. It tastes like this. and you're going to taste it and you're going to go, I think this is delicious because X, Y, Z. And I think for me, not knowing how to taste was like the biggest but it was my biggest weakness, and I wanted to grow that.
Let me sorry to interrupt this part, because you know, even for barista working for years, especially our experience all from a barista. So barista skill that people were talking about, they were mainly deferred to be understand as how quickly you can make coffees, how great your latte art is, or how smooth your milk foam is, or how fast the shots are being extracting is. This being deferred to be understanding your barista skill or to evaluate. They even didn't realize how important the sensory is.
True.
Sensory is really base and fundamental skills that every coffee person should have. I realized that after back from Shanghai, and I see the specialty coffee industry was booming, and then people was talking about the flavors and stuff. I was like, oh, now we have to be really emphasized on the sensory, on the flavors and stuff. But yeah, I want just to highlight, even now, not every person take too much attention on the sensory.
I think we're at a shift though, right? Like at this point, there's so much high-end coffees out there. Brewer's Cup is becoming more popular than barista. Mm. And latte art is always going to be popular, but I think we're having like a very huge increase of like Brewer's Cup, barista, and cup tasters at the moment, and especially in Asia. Because if I can know how to taste barista, doesn't matter if it's barista, brewers, I'm going to be able to have a very good good foundation to work from.
Mm.
And at that time, I was like, this is my biggest weakness, and this is what I need to work on.
Yep.
And so... yeah, that's why I decided to do cup tasters. After kind of starting the journey, I realized, wait, cup tasters is just about finding the difference. You don't actually... well, I think you need to be a phenomenal taster to be good at cup tasters, because the game has gotten so much harder. But at the time, it didn't register to me that to be a good cup taster, you need to be a good taster. I was just like, oh, you just need to figure out what's different. Like, how hard could it be? And it's after I started that journey, I realized how important knowing how to taste was.
By the time, do you have any mentors with you to work with on this part?
Absolutely. So the first week after I decided that I was going to be a cup taster, out of nowhere, this guy called Nuno Park happens to come into Ona, and we just started talking about coffee. And he's asking like, hey, Ona's doing like lots of competitions. You're going to compete one day, Young. We're Korean. We're just, you know, talking some shit. And he's like, oh, because he's quite a bit older than me. So he's like, I'm like his dongsaeng, you know. It's like, yeah, you should compete. What do you want to compete in? And I was like, cup tasters. I didn't even know he was a 2-time regional champion. And I was like, what about you, bro? Have you competed before? Three-time finalist, 2-time regional champion. And I'm like, yeah. And he's a head judge for Brewers Cup. Like, I am such a baby to this industry. I'm just like, yeah, man, I want to compete. What about you? Like, looking back now, like, Nuno must have been like, this little guy doesn't even...
he's very low-key.
And Nuno is not the type of person to be like showing off or being like, I'm the best taster in the room. Like, no. He will listen... and he's just going to observe everyone to see what they're going to say first. He's a very smart man. But he was my very first mentor, coach. Still is my mentor and coach. Paul, Benji, Andrew, Jack, they're all very important people. And I do have to give a favorite to someone. And I think I will have to give that, not favorite, but I have to give most credit to Nuno. Because he trained me up as a cup taster. Like, in that discipline, he was my mentor. So, thank you, Nuno.
That's a really random question, by the way. It sounds almost like a coaching, even like parenting to me, which I'm not doing. As a friend, there is nothing I can write home about. Young can do whatever he wants, because that's what he has proven by this competition, which was fantastic. There may be a couple of things I can remind Young. I know it sounds corny, again, but obviously health and happiness. Although you have crazy demanding schedules all over the place, make sure you respect your boss, who is Jean. You stay healthy, and you guys take care of each other more and more. And Young, you don't need to be worried about where you belong to either. You belong to everywhere. Cool? Then good luck with your next projects. See you soon.
So since you decided to compete, and Nuno helped you since the start until the whole journey?
Pretty much.
How long you remember you've been practicing for?
So last year, I think it was around February that I decided that I wanted to compete.
Mm-hmm.
Another person I just need to give a quick shout out to, Zanuna from Melbourne. She's also from Honor Coffee. She gave me a spoon at the Christmas party. Like, yeah, we were at the Honor Christmas party and she's like, oh, Young, you want to compete? Hey, you should try Cup Tasters. Here you go. And I was like, oh my God, this is a sign. Like, I'm going to go Cup Tasters. Like, this is it. So January went by and I pretty much like didn't know what about competition, whatever. I was just working and just thinking about it. Like, okay, I'm going to start competition soon. I'm going to sign up to it. And it was just going to be, I will do it. And then in February, Nuno comes in and he's like, what are you actually going to compete in? And I was like, have you competed before? Do you want to train together? And he's like, okay, yeah, let's train together. And so training started in February. And then the first regional competition was happening in May. So I had 3 months.
That was 2020.
Two. That was last year. Yeah.
Oh, wow. So that's even the first time you get competing.
Yeah. In February was the first training that I ever did.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Do you think you're a very fortunate guy?
Very fortunate. Like, I must have done something so nice to people in my last life. Like, God.
So basically, the first time you're getting to compete from regional to national, you get a champions title.
Everything in less, in 1 year. It kind of happened. So regionals happened 3 months after I began training. Mm-hmm. And then nationals happened 3 months after that. Mm-hmm. So started training in February. Competition was in May. National competition was in August. And actually, in regionals, I placed nationally after all four regions of Australia went. I was 10th.
Oh.
I got one wrong, and my time was like 7:45 or something, really slow. So I thought I might not make it into nationals competition because Australia has so many good cup tasters. And if you're slow, most likely that you're not going to get in. So I was just praying like, oh my God, please, if I get into nationals, I'm going to practice even harder. And then when the scores came out and I was 10th place, I was like, it was like a huge relief. Nuno was number one. So I had an extra zero on my one and he didn't have a zero on his one. So I just wanted to beat him. I was like, oh God, I want to beat my coach, you know.
What do you think is the most difficult part in the sensory training? And are you able to share with us your sensory training progress?
Sure. The most difficult part about sensory training is that there are a lot of different elements as to what you're looking for when you're judging a coffee. And when you're a beginner, it's hard to understand those concepts. Like right now, we're speaking the English language to understand what we're saying, right? And I have words that you understand, and I'm putting them together in a sentence so you understand what I'm saying and we can communicate. With coffee, there's words like I imagine every different country has a different way of describing things, right? But in the coffee language, like say we're using English to describe a coffee versus in Mandarin, the tasting notes will be different because the food that you grow up eating in China or maybe Korea or Japan is different to the food that you end up growing up with in Australia. And I think in the world, sensory training is quite hard to do consistently because there's so many different factors and how people remember different flavors and describe them. So I think learning how to taste was probably like as a whole very difficult.
Let's expand a little bit because you mentioned about the flavors. For a newbie, when they start into getting to the specialty coffee, they are mainly the first elements to get them getting interested in coffee is the flavor. So picking up all different flavors, it's a really hard job. Do you have any like tips to share with us? How do you memorize those flavors?
I think the best way to understand flavor, it's actually quite simple. If you taste something that's super bitter, something that you don't like, you have a reaction to that. If you taste something that you really like, you also have a very good reaction to that. I think that's probably the most simple way to begin. And to expand on that, different coffee origins taste very differently. Different processing methods also have a very different flavor profile. I think to become a better taster or to understand flavors better, you need to not just be tasting food or not just be tasting coffee, but have a broad spectrum of the things that you taste. Because when you taste coffee, it doesn't actually have apple or banana or orange. It doesn't have anything that actually is that. It might have some acids that are from the same... Yeah, they have like acids or certain compounds that are coming from the same fruit, but they don't actually... They're not from an apple. Coffee's not from an apple. It's from a, so it's a cherry, right? Depends how you process it. It can taste very differently. But I think the best way to become a better taster is by tasting a lot of different things and having a good reference point, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. But my question is, even though people has keep trying, yeah, keep like tasting different foods, it's still hard for them to build up that like a flavor map.
Yeah.
So I think, do you think that's relates to the talents?
I think you need a good mentor and you need a good... I think you can learn it with someone that's on the same level as you and you keep like talking about it and discussing. But it's like when you're learning how to taste, you can't expect it to just happen for you without any practice. When you're telling me you have like friends or other people that want to do more tasting, like, and but they can't taste something, are they consciously training every day to be better tasters, or are they just like whenever they have coffee they have no idea how to describe it? Because I think if I went for a run once every month, I still wouldn't be fit, and I would tell you about how hard it is for me to become fit. But all I actually really need to do is go for a run every day, and that way I will become much more fitter.
What we usually do is like we're trying to buy lots of fruit. Besides this, it's also healthy for you, so it's like another benefit. But we just like trying to taste as much as fruit as we can every day. But it needs to be every day, so it register in your brain. Because like memorizing flavor is not like we memorizing a theory and doing the exam. Yes. You kind of have to eat it repeatedly to really, really understand. Sometimes in a coffee, we had a like what we call like unripe grapes, yeah, or unripe apple, like, yes, like you don't just like stumble an unripe grape or apple just by accident. You kind of, well, not you, like you just, you don't stumble on unripe grape or unripe apple just because you're looking for it purposely. No, you usually stumble something like that because you eat it and then you just like, oh, this is an unripe, and then you try to remember that. But like, you know, normally for normal people, they just, when they taste something unripe, they're like, oh, unripe, and then they throw it away. But for us, we just savor the flavor and try to memorize it. We enjoy it. Like, we'd be like, oh, we got an unripe. Oh, so this is how it tastes. We try to memorize it.
Yeah, but you know, for me, even somehow, impurposely, I tasted fruits or the other stuff. That takes me... I was keeping buying fruit. I also keeping buying those, the fruit that's not really common to see. Like, really weird. You eating, like, the dragon fruit with the yellow skin.
Yeah.
So those stuff is, like, you rarely to see. Maybe in Thailand. Someone in Thailand would be luckier. Even though I keep buying like berries. As soon as I see berries in the supermarket, I'll buy like blueberry, raspberry. Always tasting like it. But somehow when it tastes in the coffee, you can only describe that few types of. That really annoys me sometimes.
Actually, I wouldn't know how to describe this experience without kind of going a little bit into detail about how I've found the shortcut. I think tasting foods and doing all that is great. Just like, if you have a good diet, you're more healthy. Like, it's one step in the right direction. And I would recommend people to do that. They don't need to do it every day, but it's a good thing to do. I think cupping coffees as often as you can, whether it's every day, once every 2 days, and tasting all the different origins, I think that is also like another thing that is just as important, if not maybe slightly more. Because like cup tasters for me was a way to become better at tasting, because at the time, I didn't know what different origins taste like. I didn't know what different processing tastes like. But because I need to make sure I know the difference, and I'm certain when I put it to the front, I need to understand the factors that make it different and all the variables that do make it. So I'm consciously trying to find these differences. And by thinking about what the differences are, But having people alongside me to calibrate with, just like if you were going to do Brewers Cup judging, you would all talk amongst each other about what you're tasting and why. I think by unanimous, like, what do you call it? Like a group voting system, you're like, if you say apple, I say apple, Gene says apple, then we agree that there is a strong sense of apple from there. Is there actual apple in there? No. But there's a strong flavor that we can all associate with. Okay, so we're relatively calibrated. Does that make sense?
It does, but you know, sometimes apples turns up quite often in a coffee, right? Sure. And then the difference is you describe it as green apple or I describe it as red apple. Most likely, apple to me is red apple.
And then there's cooked apple, there's ripe apple, there's caramelized apple. Yeah, stewed apple. I think if you've ever had an apple pie, you would kind of lean towards the more stewed side. Yeah. And really, all the taste descriptors, like maybe one day there'll be a complete change of how coffees are evaluated and talked about.
Right.
But at least for now, I think the rules require you to associate with a memory or a reference. Mm. And as long as most people can agree with that, and say I say orange and you say banana. Gene says maybe mandarin.
Mm.
Okay. A banana does not really have a high citric quality. Orange and mandarin, relatively similar.
Mm.
Okay, then we'd try to talk to each other about why does this taste or have acidity that reminds me and Gene of citrus, but yourself as a... Is banana a tropical fruit? What is a banana?
Yeah.
I think to become a better taster, some people are just born naturally talented and they can associate things better, but I think the practice that you need to be doing particularly needs to be calibrating, discussing,
right,
making sure that if I'm tasting orange and you're tasting banana, but if all our friends are also tasting orange, I think it's not like you shouldn't shame someone. You shouldn't say, what the hell, you stupid, you taste banana. I think right. It needs to be like, hey, why do you taste banana?
Right.
Because we're all tasting orange. Yeah. And maybe it's the body and maybe it's the mouthfeel that it's like creamy, and that's why you get banana, because bananas are quite like textural, it's quite heavy. Whereas orange is quite fresh and
so, you know? From your description, I understand it's hard to improve on your own. Yeah. That you really have to collaborate with someone else, like three or four people ideally, and then you guys discuss and collaborate, and you have much more understanding of the texture of it. That's why people are hard to grow.
I think I learned that the most when I went to judge the regional Brewers Cup competitions, and that's where I did my first calibration.
Mm.
This was before, actually, just after my first regional competition. Before my national competition and before I went for my Q graders. And that's where I really learned, like, to calibrate, to become a better taster is to understand all these different flavors, but to be able to associate them so it's relatable to everyone else.
How do you see those artificial flavors? I'm asking because in recent years, we have so much special fermentation coffee comes out. I think CM and anaerobic is quite low-key now. Let's talk about the thermal shock and double fermentate or whatever it is. When you taste it, you feel like, it's a fruit, but it doesn't taste like a natural fruit anymore. It maybe tastes like, say, strawberry jelly, say, candied muscat grape. So these flavors start getting on our tasting notes, because in the way of how should we practice on our sensory, you know, because those flavors we're not that familiar with.
I think any flavor is good flavor. Mm-hmm. And if you can discuss it with a lot of people, I think it's no different than any other processing. The most important thing is everyone needs to express and collaborate, because at the end of the day, there's no right or wrong. It's just, guys, what are we actually tasting from this? Because we need to put a taste descriptor on the bag or on the taste descriptions because of how the industry is right now.
But you know, for some people, when they start, like coffeeholics, coffee newbies, when they start drinking coffee, especially if they come to Diggies, and Paul likes fermentation coffee, as everyone knows. And if you give them those coffees to shape their first impression, they were thinking, oh, that specialty coffee, it is like that. And then you give them moisture coffee, they probably won't be too much appreciated. I shouldn't say that, but you know, because the flavor is too predominant to give them the memory. But like Eugene said, traditionally, the sweetness, the acidity, the mouthfeel, the aftertaste, the body, the cleanness, is also a very important attribute to determine what a good cup of coffee is. But you can't say that to a newbie. Say, oh, I tell you what, yeah, it has flavors, but you see a sweetness, you see the aftertaste or something, and it's just okay if you compare to the traditional washer coffee.
I guess it's kind of similar to like, if, do you mind if I ask what is your favorite car?
Jeep.
A Jeep. Let's say tomorrow someone were to give you a Formula One Ferrari to drive on the road. Would you take it?
No.
Right. And even if I gave you the Ferrari to drive.
I don't like Ferrari.
Right. I think customers, they have something they like, and sometimes you can't convince them otherwise. Mm. But I think if someone knew cars well enough, I would be like, hey, do you like Ferrari? You'd be like, no. I'd be like, but did you know that Ferrari had X, Y, and Z? Mm. You might go, oh, I actually might try it. Mm. And what if I were to tell you there's actually a Ferrari Jeep or a Ferrari-looking Jeep? And you might actually go, yeah, I might try that. But if I keep trying to force you to drive that Formula One car or maybe a Toyota Corolla, you're going to be like, I don't want a Toyota Corolla. You know what I mean? So I think at the end of the day, if customers like what customers want, I mean, if customers like what they like, it's up to you to try. It's not, you don't have to try, but if you can make things more interesting for them by introducing something in a very interesting way, in a different way, I think that's where the trick is. I don't think you can ever convince someone to do something or like something that they don't like. So if I love Geisha and you like Robusta, I think I honestly can convince you to like Geisha or at least see Geishas in a different way, but I think it'll take some time, but it also require a different approach that also kind of is in your hands if you actually want to like it or try it or not. And if you want to know how to be a better taster, I think then the answer would be go judging, go expose yourself and collaborate with other people and exchange ideas, because the best way to learn is from each other.
What was your guys' attitude on infused coffees?
Love it. If you're lying about it, no. But I think if you're transparent about it, and the most important thing is it gives more value back to the farmer, because there's more ways that you can utilize that coffee. And I think the coffee industry in the beginning was like, what the hell are we going to do with infused coffees? It's fake. But I think that whole approach is now drastically changing rather quickly. And they're also used in a lot of signature drinks in different specialty cafes. And people love them on cold brew. So I think there's a demand from the market. It's just how can you utilize something that actually increases the flavor like 5 to 10 times. Of course, might not have the same complexity as maybe something that's really well processed and looked after, but it doesn't mean it's a terrible cup or bad cup. It's just, it's a great cup, and you just need to find different ways to utilize it.
I guess like we also get an opportunity from Carlos Escobar that sharing a story about his experiencing how small farmer have to settle with a low grade bean, and then they have to sell large amount quantity of coffee bean to just get a small amount of money just because the tasting note. While they have to feed their children, while they have to feed their family, you know, with that kind of amount of money, it's not enough, you know. So like I think like infused bean just kind of opened the door for those small farmer to be able to sell their bean into specialty coffee and then into a wider market as well, because in that sense, like more people gonna buy that coffee more. That also makes the farmer be able to sell more.
I think it's done a lot of good for the industry, and it's pushing people to innovate and think more. So yeah, just like technology, sometimes we're hooked on it and we're scrolling for days and our productivity is like at rock bottom. I think we just need to manage those things better. So it's, yeah, I think it needs to be a discussion that needs to be had constantly, and people just need to keep talking about it.
Were you able to tell those infused coffees with using low grade coffee beans?
Lacks complexity. I mean, like bad infused coffees, like just doesn't taste like any fruit. Like it just tastes so bland. But I think there's like a good infused fermentation, and then there's like bad. I wouldn't really know what the bad is. Like for me, bad would either be that the strawberry flavor did not penetrate the bean, so there's actually none. Yes. So you just get the label that says strawberry flavor, but you don't get anything. And another bad strawberry would be like, it's so artificial that it just does not taste like coffee and it's not pleasant. I think if you do infuse coffees well, it can be like drinking a peach tea, peach fermentation. I think some of the coffees from Jairo Asila, they're great. And they're open about it too. And what else? There's some Indian.
Oh, Indian, I've tried once. I think it's okay.
Maybe it's just they need to ferment it for a little bit longer. Maybe they just need to implement different techniques. But yeah, some of them we just tried on the cupping tables. They just didn't have any fruit qualities. Yeah. Some of them did, but not as much as the coffee net ones. Mm. And I think it was 2 years ago I tried the first infused and I was like, maybe not so great. It's kind of has that peach flavor, but it feels really artificial. To now being like, that's Lipton iced tea. Like, it's getting so much better every year. So
I have to say it's true. The first time I had coffee nets infused coffee was, they still can do very few. Ginger, cinnamon, and the mandarin. That's the first three I had in 2019. I still remember. Yeah, they did.
Interesting, but it wasn't like...
Yeah, and it wasn't pleasant.
Yeah. And now it's like, oh, I would drink that.
Getting better and better, yeah. I have to say it is.
Because the Sudan Rumé is still much, much better than, or at least from a cup scoring perspective, scores much better. I personally enjoy it a lot better because of the complexity and things, but I don't think I'm ever going to be like, yeah, infused coffees are far better than any other coffee you can buy. Why would I ever buy normal coffee? Like, I think there's a place for it.
So when you cup the coffees, what attributes comes first to catch your attention? Say like flavors, sweetness, acidity, mouthfeel, aftertaste, body-wise.
For cup tastes specifically, I try to have like certain protocols as to how and when to use those different techniques. So like the very first sip, I try to get an average of everything. Like, you know when you have a metal detector and you're trying to like scan? I've never actually used one, but I've seen people use it and it's like, dee, 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 and they see something metal and it's like, dee, 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 dee. It's like ringing. So for me, when I'm slurping, I try to like think of all departments of scoring. I like to think of it as like a Brewer's Cup score sheet or like a Q grader score sheet. I'm like thinking of it in my head, like mentally. And I would just like go a few sips, whoop, 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 and I would just see if anything rings. If I already have something that rings, then I just need to try it again just to make sure that I'm 100% sure, and then I put it out. If it's a little bit more difficult, say out of 60 grams to a liter, say one is fully Brazil, one has 5 grams of Kenya in it, as an example. Then two of them are Brazil, one of them has 5 grams of extra Kenya added. Mm. I don't know that, but I'll be tasting to see if anything rings. And from that 5 grams of Kenya, something will go off. Whether it's maybe a slight difference in acidity or a slight difference in flavor, something will ping.
So you don't have any like preference stands up, but it can be everything.
It can be everything. There's different protocols that I use. So first sip, like you know when you normally slip soup, like that's what I do. And then I get an average of everything. Sweetness, body, flavor, acidity, balance, everything. Nothing pings? Okay, let's try aroma. You know the whistling slip where you go frip, frip? What I find with that, it just disperses everything, allows me to like smell and taste at the same time. And so that would accentuate the aroma. And then if that doesn't work, I'd try another one where I just kind of like gulp it. Like,
then, you know when you're competing, because we are watching, right? And yeah. Then that Indonesian girl, she's actually great.
She's very good.
But she doesn't slip.
No, she just goes
straight up. Have you guys discussed afterwards?
Didn't get a chance to try, but I think everyone has a different way. How I approach it is just from my practice, I like to try doing a lot of things in different ways. And I've seen a lot of other people do it differently. So I just questioned why and how they're doing it differently and to see if that actually has an impact on what I do. Like I've seen Charlie do it and he shakes his head. And I find that sometimes actually helps. But then I'm like...
Why? What does it help with?
I don't know. It's really strange. Charlie's done it, and the guy that after Charlie did it, the Barista Moon, his Instagram tag, but he did it as well on the world stage. I don't think I did. But I think it's up to the person. Like, I could not have done it, and maybe had the same amount of success, but you never know, right? But for me, I was interested in maximizing all the different variables and all the different methods, and all the people that I learned from had different techniques. So I tried to do it their way to see if it would give me a different advantage. And that's how I developed my kind of protocol. And then swallowing obviously just gives you more aftertaste. So I've separated kind of into those few different ways of doing it. And you need to practice that so you're consistent every single set. If on one of them I'm like whistling, but on the other one I don't even do the whistle, I just do normal slurps, and then in the other one I just kind of like, I don't know, have a whole different slurping technique, then Nuno calls it having protocol. And for the Indonesian girl, Mandy, maybe her protocol was just like, keep it simple, but just think about the different things as you're tasting. But for me, I would like to think about different things that I'm tasting, but also try all the different methods. Yeah. So I'm sure that when I make a decision, it's like I've gone through the checklist of everything that I needed to do, and I'm sure it's that.
You know, when we just mentioned earlier about the cupping, how important into our supply chain. Yes, you know, from the whole supply chain, if we work in the industry, from the green bean selection, we using cupping to identify the green bean quality. In the roasting side, we cup to ensure our roasting quality, and for roaster side, we do cupping to ensure we have the most character out of the coffee and make sure replicate when we're brewing and extraction. But cupping competition seems like a different category, because it only allows you to distinguish or to pick up the different ones on the table, which somehow is not. As the people who are watching it, I was questioning myself also, what does this competition really help into my daily operation?
That's a good thing to ask. I completely agree. To that, I say, how does Formula One help daily drivers when they're going for their license? To that, I say, how did rocket ships help us function better in human society? To that, I ask, how does latte art, Brewers Cup, or roasting championships do anything in terms of helping our daily cafe operation? And to that, with that said, it's not I'm trying to defend cup tasters. I just want to simply say it has no relevancy at all, or at least not enough that would have a daily impact. But sports, actually competitive sports, is competitive sports because there's excitement, there's professional players that have played and spent so much time at this thing, and it probably doesn't benefit anyone other than, you know, someone knocks someone out and it's like, wow, they're the champion now. I think cup tasters specifically, it's a test to see, without any judges, to see if you can find out the difference and be correct. And I think having no judges is actually quite a cool concept, right? Because in barista competition, latte art, brewers, it's all about how do the judges feel? It's all about perspective. It's different cultures. How are they going to judge? How are 20 different judges going to try judge maybe 20 different brewers? Everyone's going to get a different set of judges. Everyone's looking for something slightly different, even though they're aiming to do the same thing. Some people might just not like washed as a personal preference, so they might score it down. Of course, you're not allowed to, but there's preferences involved. And I feel like the more people that's involved in the judging criteria, the more that can get dramatic, right? Infused coffees. There's a lot of conversation happening there. I've gone very off topic, but in cup taster specifically, it's a game to find out the difference. And to get good at that, I think you need to be able to cup and have a cup and taste a lot of different coffees to understand why coffees could be different, but also make sure that whatever the difference is that you find, it is correct. And I think most of the people that compete in cup tastes are roasters and people that work in green beans. I don't think it necessarily helps them in their daily operation. I don't think it helps them cup any faster or be better scorers. Actually, yes and no. I think it might help them be better scorers because they're being more critical in their analysis, but I don't think it's going to change their business model or revolutionize their whatever it is they're doing.
Do you know why I think it's hard? Because you don't have to tell differences. You just need to find the differences. And it sounds like you said, something bringing up your mind. Everyone's different. And sometimes it's even hard to describe. But when you do in cupping on the table daily basis, you need to describe.
Mm.
You know what I mean? So that makes me feel like a little bit apart.
But if you're wrong, then you're not good at that. But if you're right and you can describe that, that's even better, right?
Mm-mm-mm.
And confidence aside, I think like if you're a barista competitor, you're probably going to have to spend more time knowing, or you're going to spend more time dialing in a coffee to get better at dialing in how that should taste and then deliver that to a customer. I think for cup tasters, you like to be a good cup taster. Yes, you need to be able to pick it out. But how can you know and pick it out without actually... How can you pick something out and be correct if you're not 100% sure?
Mm.
So I think in that way of critical... Like, it's critical analysis, but in a very rapid time slot. By going through the train to get good at that, you have to have a solid sensory foundation. In the regional competitions, I almost missed out on nationals by one cup.
Mm.
I was 10th place.
Mm.
And I still hadn't really maximized my full potential.
Mm.
For nationals, I trained much more difficult.
Mm.
And I trained much more longer.
Mm.
And I was, on that day, or on those days, better than everyone else. As soon as I finished my national competitions, I could taste all the differences, but I couldn't still describe everything, right? So what did I do after that? I went for my Q graders, because winning nationals is one thing and picking out the differences is one thing, but to be able to describe and then like really know, because like in a sense, I wanted to prove to myself, like, this isn't just luck.
Mm.
This is like, you need to know what you're tasting. Otherwise, how am I going to win at Worlds?
Mm.
So a reason for going to get my Q graders was actually to solidify my foundation. So I would have a solid foundation to work from. I know I can taste all the sensitivities. Check. Now, let's try to describe all those sensitivities and nuances. Get my Q graders. Check. And then for Worlds, I was like, doesn't matter what's coming up. I can taste the sensitivities and I know why it's different. There's no way I'm going to lose. Like, that was pretty much my mindset. There's another competition out there in Europe, I think. I can't remember. I think it's somewhere in Spain. I don't know the name of the competition right now. But a friend from doTERRA, Gabriel, he didn't do any cup tasters competitions, and one day he was at this expo and they were doing a cash prize, I think like 5,000 euros or something, and the competition itself is like 6 triangulations, and then you also have to describe where the beans are from and what process they are or something, and even the region you have to guess or identify. And he won that whole competition, and he cups coffees like every single day or most days. And we were at doTERRA, I was in doTERRA last month with the other Brewers Cup barista champions, and we were cupping coffees with this guy, and there's like all these new lots that they haven't even tasted before. And this guy was just like, we're talking about different flavor notes and everything, and we're trying to describe the varietals. Like, all of us were champions, right? But we couldn't, like, we guessed a few of the varietals. But this guy that works there, does this every day, he knew all the varietals by heart. All the processings. And he was just like knocking them out like one by one. So I think if someone like him went to World Cup tasters, I think he'd be the next champion.
Next question is, why this competition is so difficult?
Why? Okay. If I gave you 2 cups of coffee, one of them is a Brazil and one of them is a Panama Geisha, would you be able to tell me which one is the Panama Geisha?
Straight away, I guess.
Right. Okay. Okay. You have 2 cups of coffee in front of you. They are both made of Brazil, let's say Mundo Novo, super simple blender coffee. And in one of the cups, there is 1 gram of Panama Geisha. Do you think you could taste that 1 gram of Panama Geisha?
50% confident.
50%, let's do it right now.
Can Can you tell me the extreme?
Extreme.
Extreme circumstances you actually met, either on the competition stage or throughout your
thing.
Practice.
They never tell you what they did at on stage, so you never get to know.
Well, you guys will find out after competition.
Never. No one knows. Like, literally, I've tried everybody. No one wants to tell me what they did during comp. Not this year, not last year, not the year before. I don't think, literally, I don't think anyone knows. I think they're really secretive about it. I honestly think they're just like, they don't want to tell anyone. But the rule book, they say they may make it at 60 grams per liter. And they may use temperatures between 92 and 96. Yeah, they may. With grind sizes, I think it's like, I'm pretty sure it says they have to be ground identically. Whether that means same amount of grams or same grind size or same amount of grams, but it can be different grind size. I'm not too sure, but I can only assume. But from hearing other people train for it in the past, like people like Yama, people like Charlie and Nuno even, actually everyone that I train with, they were saying that they trained up to like a gram of difference. So if you make a 60 gram per liter batch, in one cup, or actually in two cups, the other cup will just have 1 gram difference of something else. So they just have to try, just accustomed to the difference of only 1 gram.
Do you think the word one, the word cup tasters one, is the hardest one you met so far?
I think so.
The one that took you the most of the time on the stage?
Second round. I remember...
Where did you start?
Oh, I just had a like anxiety attack on stage. I just forgot what I was doing. My mind went blank and I was like, where am I? What am I doing? Oh my God, I'm slurping coffee in front of hundreds of people.
We are watching you because I think the first four cups, you were not in the status. But the last four cups, very quick. So what happens to you that time?
So at Worlds, the quality of coffees were also not particularly high. Like, they're not going to be giving you geishas and pink bourbons and, you know, carbonic maceration. Like, they're giving you maybe like 80-point scoring coffees, 81. Actually, most of them were washed and the differences were so minor. I was thinking maybe they put a little extra water in one, or maybe the varieties are just slightly different because the differences are so minor. Like, one of the cups had like this slight bitter aftertaste. One of them had like much more drying acidity that would just like vaporize your palate. And so those super high acidic triangulation sets, you have to be super careful because one, like just because one of like they're very similar acidity, but because one of them is like super, super sharp, it can often trick your brain into thinking the next one that you taste, which is slightly weaker, but because it's actually just after the one that you just tasted, which is super sour, you might perceive them as being identical. And yeah, you just have to try all the different things to make sure X and Y is different and you pick the right one out. But I'm not sure if it's a combination of nerves and because the cups are hot, but a lot of the mistakes generally happen on the very first and second cups. I don't know if we are ever able to, I mean, we can't look at it right now, but if anyone who's listening to the podcast gets to have a look at what happened on the world stage in the final, the Greek competitor and the Ukrainian competitor, they're phenomenal tasters. But I think, like, I talked to them after the competition, and they just said they were focusing on time. And in the world finals, they are going to do whatever the hell it takes to make those sets as hard as possible. I believe so. I don't think they're just going to put easy sets and then just make it just sprint to the finish. Like, it's the fastest to finish, they're going to win. They're going to try make it as challenging as possible. And I think with the mindset of having, like, I'm going to go fast, you're not going through I don't know what their protocol is, but you're not going through the checklist as thoroughly. And for me, I'm not going to put a cup up unless I'm 100% sure or 1,000% sure. So I just wanted to make sure when I first tasted those, at least the first four cups, to me, they were quite hot. So I was just trying to like taste them throughout the whole hot to warm stage. But because as they cool down, they do change a little bit. If nothing comes up, I skip it. And then I come back to it when it's cold. Or if it's just too hot and I just cannot get a hold of it, then I skip it and I come back when it's warm. And then if it's too hard, then I skip it and I come back when it's cold. Question.
So what about the 8 cups on the table are or extremely hot? How are you going to handle with it?
You would have to deal with it. You have to blow on it or cool it down or something. But they usually don't start the competition unless they temp check. And it's like 60 or 65 degrees, I think. And then they start.
So they still give you the range, yeah. Though. Okay, I see.
At the moment, it's all ceramic cups. They're not double-walled. They cool down rather quickly. I think it is a flawed way to do the competition. But because they're ceramic bowls, not like traditional cups that are a bit more narrow, they do tend to lose heat quite or faster. But yeah, in world competitions, even nationals, I believe they do check it. But sometimes it is a little... Some sets will be hotter than others. It's very unlikely that you're going to have all 8 sets that are identical. Mm. Some sets are going to be colder. Some sets are going to be hotter. Mm. And yes, some people have burned their tongues before on the very first cup.
I think it will happen quite often.
it definitely happens. But if you get a hot cup, you either skip it or you just try to cool it down somehow. I know even some people, they dip their whole spoon and they swirl the sets to make sure like all 3 sets are cold. And sometimes they just agitate it to cool it down faster.
Can you blow? Can a spoon?
Yeah, you can. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you're good. I'm pretty sure I did that on some of the sets. Yeah. Sometimes some coffees, it's not like most coffees express themselves better when they're cool. Rarely some coffees express better when they're hotter. If you find a hard set in the first few, don't get stuck on it. Try the other ones first and always tell yourself you can come back because you can.
And does the material of the cupping spoon make difference?
I think so. Personally, I prefer thinner spoons. I prefer thinner spoons because, well, one, it's lighter. Two, I can get a better whistle slurp from it. I've tried stainless steel. I've tried titanium coated. I've tried origami spoons. And I tried to adjust myself to each of the spoons. And I ended up just going with the one that I got gifted from my friend. For me, I liked it because it was thin. I find thinner spoons allow me to get a better angle when I do the whistle slurp. And it's lighter, so I don't really have to think about the weight. Have you played any sports, like maybe badminton or tennis?
Yeah.
Okay. When you have a heavier racket, it could just be by like 10, 15, or 20 grams. But when you play a full match with it, your swing changes because of that heftiness. Mm, like for tennis, like I think I preferred heavy rackets because the way that I swing. And if I use lighter rackets, I frame, hit, like it's just not a pleasant experience. I know spoons don't have that much of a weight difference, but you can find ones that are slightly longer, slightly thicker. And I really think it's up to you to find what you like. Mm. But for me, thick ones were a bit distracting. One, because of the weight. Two, because I can't get that whistle that I want. And also, I talk a lot, but my mouth isn't that big. Some people have really big mouths. I don't know why. And they prefer big spoons.
Okay.
I don't know.
So... call back the questions that we had in part 2 about slurp. Some people find the slurp really helps them, like too extreme or too expand in the aroma that we had. It's easier for us to judge if the coffee is different from the other. While some voices were said, okay, if you slurp, the aroma remain in your palate might be affecting you to the second cup. What's your opinion on that?
There's a golden tip. I drank the most amount of water in the finals than any other training session or competition rounds.
Why is that it's golden tip?
Because you shouldn't be afraid of drinking water. And the reason I did that is because one of the or two of the sets were had so two sets, so 6 cups of coffee were super high in acidity. Like so high that my tongue felt like it's been sandpapered. Like it was a horrible experience. And I would have to drink water, otherwise the next sets would just be like I wouldn't taste a thing. It's really strange. But a lot of people, I don't want to say that the Greek guy and the Ukrainian guy, Orestes and Vasilev, did the same thing, but I think if they had taken their time and allowed themselves to have a bit of a bit of a break in between, I think they could have done a lot better because they have the skill. Like semifinals, second quarterfinals, and the first round, they were killing it, right? So yeah, just be kind to yourself. Don't never rush. That's another golden tip. Actually, third golden tip would be, if you drink a sip of water, the next set that you do, always make sure to sip it twice. Because after you have water, the next cup of coffee you're going to have is going to mix with the water that's already left in your palate. So just prime it with the first one, and then spit it, swallow it, whatever, and then use the next one as your base reference when you sip the next one. It's not a big one, but I got this tip from Mitch from Honor Canberra. He's the head of QC there at the moment. And he's a multiple time national finalist. And yeah, he helped me a lot as well. So shout out to Mitch. Yeah. And not even don't be afraid, but be brave and just experiment. I find a lot of people only do the whistling slip. They're like, beep, 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 beep. And it's like, cool, you can slip like that. But I know you can slip like that. Why don't you try other slipping methods? Like this, you know, like it's cool and, you know, it's a bit of a flex, but, and it does definitely help, but maybe mix it up a bit. Like you don't, it's not the only slipping method. Yeah. To those people that do that, I'm sure they have their reasons why, like it helps me taste better and all this. But I think if you combine it with other slipping methods, you'll probably do better because you're using different techniques to evaluate different things. So you can tick different boxes off. I think it's just another way. It's like another language you can speak.
Is any of the cup you pick up immediately without any doubts?
The last one was actually like, I would have. But again, you're on the world stage. You don't want to make a little mistake to ruin everything that you did. And if you're quite confident that, you know, everyone else went too fast and you're actually good on time and you're sure that all the cups that you selected are correct, you're going to do whatever it takes to make sure that final one was correct. But that last cup, I was most confident with that cup out of all the cups that I've ever tasted in my entire championship rounds. Like, that was the easiest cup.
We are so curious, how do you guys prepare cupping practice at home?
Fortunately, we've had a lot of good friends, or we still do have a lot of good friends, and they work at a lot of different roasteries, different cafes, and they were nice enough to come practice with us for competition, but also sponsor a lot of the beans that we use for practice. Because we had a wide range of beans to choose from, we would blend maybe like 5 to 10% differences on each batch. And we would, I bought 3 batch brewers in my house and had borrowed one from a friend. So we had 4 batch brewers and we made about 8 different batch brews each time and practiced around 4 to 6 sets every day.
Regardless of what happens every night.
Every night.
Wow.
Sometimes Jean would be sleeping. Well, she'd be trying to sleep. She's on her phone. She's scrolling. So I'm like, oh, she's still awake. Jean, I need your help. I really need your help. Can you please help me? I just made my sets already, but I need you to mix them because I can't mix them by myself. Otherwise, I'll know. And then she'd be like, okay.
Right. So constantly practice is really a big tip as well. Every day necessary?
It is. The moment you skip one day, it's just going to like, back down again.
Not always.
How long does it last like this? The practice pace? Yeah, the training.
I'd say like it would last a good week to 2 weeks. Sometimes you just need a good rest. For Worlds, we went to Greece a week earlier and we only practiced once 4 days before and once 2 days before. And that was it. For the first 4 days that we were in Athens, actually, when we went to Greece, we spent some time in one of the islands, just drinking wine, eating kebabs, going for swims, just relaxing and taking mind off competition.
Well, one thing that we managed to find out, though, that your physical health and then your mental health is quite affecting on how well you can taste, actually. Like, for example, if you're like quite stressed on that day, like your mind will be whether you realize it or not, your mind will be like quite foggy a little bit, and then it will be much more harder for you to come up like, oh, this is actually tastes like raspberry. And then when you're quite stressed and your mind like quite foggy, you will be like, what is it again?
When your mind's foggy, it impacts your decision-making skills.
So that's also why, like, when we go to the world, the first 3 days that we learn, we need to like some kind of like break from all the practice and everything, from all the competition thing, or from all coffee. We just took a break for those 3 days, and then after that 3 days, then we come back to Athens to just like briefly practice a little bit to not stress him up. Because like we found out like it happened in international, right? You were sick.
Day before, we had like a really bad like sore throat. Yama, who was the 2018 world champion, he kind of just came up to check on me to see how I was doing, because Label Coffee was a place that I went to actually learn from Yama. Oh my god, I almost forgot about Mr. Yama. Yeah. When I wanted to do cup tasters, his shop, I think his shop had just opened, so I went over there to ask him for all the tips and tricks, and so he was also someone that really helped me throughout this journey. Anyway, at Nationals, we met up with him, and he's like, how are you feeling? How's your physical condition like? And I was like, man, if I'm being honest, I got this really bad sore throat, and I'm quite nervous about tomorrow. He's like, wait here. Runs off, comes back 2 minutes later with a bottle of Listerine, some real strong Listerine. He's just like, use this twice a day, when you wake up, when you go to sleep, brush your teeth like 3 times a day, make sure there's like no harmful things in there, and find propolis and spray it on your throat. And that night we went out to the pharmacy, we found the propolis spray. I was like spraying, brushing my teeth, rinsing my mouth with water, and the next day it got a little bit better, but by the finals day we were completely like okay, but throughout the first and second day it was like a real struggle.
I think we also experienced, like, because he trained every day, right? So some day he will have a long day, some day he will have an easy day. On the easy day, he will have a better score than when he had a long day.
So you need to make sure your health condition is at good status. You can't make yourself too tired. No. You have to enough rest, enough sleep. Well, what's your dietary habits like?
Jean loves spicy food. So I don't know if you know the Samyang ramen.
Yeah, Indonesian eating quite heavy, strong food. Korean, they have like the chili paste as well.
I had the combination of the worst. Jean loves heavy food. Rendang, barbecue pork. I'm struggling to get her to eat any vegetables, if I'm being honest.
But do you actually control your dietary or no?
For competition, even now, no, I don't. To say that, it's not like we have junk food every day. So the thing is, Jean loves barbecue and heavily spiced foods, and especially like spicy foods. So you can imagine rendang, barbecue pork, instant noodles, like the spicy indomie, but also the spicy Korean one. You know the one with the chicken with the fire coming out its mouth? The buldak. She loves that. So I'm training. I'm literally I've poured all my coffee sets, and she's making those noodles outside in the living room. And I'm about to start slurping, and I just smell spicy noodles coming through the door. I'm like, yo, I'm trying to practice for worlds, man. Like, what? And I'm getting distracted because I want to take a bite.
You know what? That is a secret. I train him, you know, no matter what kind of environment that you're in, you have to be like...
Thank you, coach. Really appreciate that training.
No problem.
I could tell you what I ate for Nationals. On the first day, I had, I think my competition was around like 4 or 5 o'clock. I woke up, had a banana and an apple, and then for lunch, I had Subway. Big one. So I had like a little bit at 12 and then another little bit at 2. Or half, right. 12, 2.
That's pretty light though.
And then in the Subway, it was like, I think it was like turkey or ham or something.
No sauce or without sauce?
I think I just had mayo. That was about it.
All right.
And then for the second round, I think we went to get Chinese food.
We chose it carefully, you know?
No, like, carefully. Subway is careful. So we had noodle soup, fried rice, dumplings, Mongolian beef. This was right before the round, maybe like 2 hours before. Food is important because you need to have a good enough diet that your body can sustain itself. But at the same time, like if I knew I was going to go compete on that same day, I would not be having the spiciest food I could possibly handle and then jump on stage. That probably will have an impact. How much of an impact? I don't know. I haven't tried. I've tried eating spicy noodles at home and practicing. I've definitely done much, much worse. For Greece, we had gyros, kebabs, barbecued meat, salad, and then wine every night.
Another thing that we found out is like, so if you doing the triangulation, if you're doing the cupcake with an empty stomach.
Yes, I've practiced on empty stomachs. I've tried like fasting. I've tried eating right before. Eating right before does not give you good results because your palate's already primed with food and other oils and everything. If you fast, you might taste the first one really well, but because you're hungry, because you're like battling yourself mentally, and because you have nothing in your stomach, caffeine absorbs much faster, the effect isn't pleasant.
You know, like when you're too caffeinated, you become like quite dizzy and everything?
Yes, especially when I'm hungry.
But because your palate also hasn't had anything to eat, as soon as you put coffee in it, it just becomes like super prone to dryness very easily. I wouldn't recommend it.
All right. So what is your most difficult time along the way to the competition?
Eugene, every day. Every night. Personally, the most difficult. We sacrificed a lot of together time, family time. It did exist. We went out for birthdays, made sure for that, Christmas, those kind of things. But, you know, like once a week, you want to go out somewhere nice, have a date night. Maybe some days you want to just sit down and watch movies. We still had time for movies. We're big anime people. So we'd watched Hero Academia, Demon Slayer, all that stuff every week when it came out. But, like, in a way, we didn't sacrifice too much because we tried to fit it in our lives no matter what we did. But definitely when her parents were over, when my parents were over, we couldn't spend as much time with them. We couldn't go on dates as often as we would like. Most of the time it would be her gene schedule would be like wake up six, go to work at 7, come back home at 4. Same as me, wake up at 6, go to work at 7, come back at 4. Sometimes I'm training at work from 4 to 6 or 7, and then while Jean's at home, maybe she's making some food, maybe she's just showering and getting ready to, you know, go to bed.
So the practice doesn't give you a hard time?
Practice didn't, but what it took away to fit the practice in, it did.
We know all the competitions happens recently. We all need a team to support us, yes. Right? Most of the competitors, they're competing, at least they have really big brands supporting them behind. But you, I reckon, as an individual competitor, or we call freelancer competitor, you have the whole Sydney coffee community supporting you. What does it mean to you?
It means the world. Like, I think when I cried at Worlds, it was not because I was so proud of myself and happy that I won, but it was more the fact that every single person that helped me to get to that point, like it just all came back. It's like flashbacks of like everyone that helped me to get to this point. Like it was thanks to everyone's help that we're able to bring home the gold. And that was the tearing point for me. So it literally meant the world.
Like when we get the announcement, like, both of us literally can feel like the love from people in Sydney just coming back to us. Like we still remember like how our dear friend like Hansel, he keep bringing beans for us to practice, you know, like, and then not only him but like Yogi, Jesse and everyone around Sydney keep bringing beans for us because they know how expensive it is to keep practicing with coffee bean. It's all because of them, you know, like they keep cheering us, they keep practicing with us, they keep motivating us. Like, so when we got the announcement, like, we were so happy because we're able to show them that their love is worth of something, you know. Like, we make it, we all make it. When we say like we make it, it's like me and Young, but like we and all the other people in Sydney, we make it, we manage to make it, you know. Like, this is like, we are still newbie, you know, but because of the support and love.
All right, Young, how are you going to contribute to the community?
Oh, God.
Oh, Young, how are you going to contribute back to the community?
So, okay. I think I do want to just address something, which is like everyone perceives that I might have just gone through as an individual. I think the fact that we had so many friends behind us means that it's not just an individual effort. I would be lying if I did not mention that Label and Honor helped me a lot. Label, or the owner of Label, Mr. Yama, he gave me his space at any of his shops to practice as long as I needed, use as many of the beans that I wanted. Every time I worked there, I'd always practice a few sets before leaving. And I'd always invite friends over there to help set up practices and conduct practices. And plus, it was only 5 minutes away from my house, so it was perfect. I don't have to bring all the training back home sometimes. So, yeah, it was very good. And then for Honor, we had people like Mitch, Jason, Tim, Jim, Bora. Like, everyone was just so supportive in that front. Alex too. Like, they gave us space. They gave us beans. They trained with me sometimes, and they were always very encouraging. And Breville too. Like, they were super supportive for my journey into Worlds, and they were very helpful on that front. Yeah, so the coffee roasters, friends were huge. And I think there's a special thanks to Sam from Stoke. He flew up from Malaysia a week before competition to spend time with us and make sure that we were mentally okay, physically okay. He rented out a car to drive us around everywhere, and he was like the mentor and big brother I never had. So thank you, Sam.